Just want to remind everybody to keep your microphones muted. Oh, there's the Allens. Hi, Allens. Keep your microphones muted in case, so when you're not speaking, so that the speaker view doesn't change to you inadvertently. So let's go ahead and begin the City Council meeting on Tuesday, March 16th, 2021. It is 7:04. This meeting will be held electronically pursuant to Utah Code 52-4-2074 and my February 19th, 2021 written determination that conducting an electronic meeting with an anchor location presents a substantial risk to the health and safety of those who may be present at the anchor location. So we will move on to our first, well, our second item, the approval of the meeting's agenda. If anybody would like.
I'll go ahead and make the motion to approve tonight's meeting's agenda.
I'll second.
Mayor, you're on mute.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, thank you. Councilmember Ellsworth made the motion. Councilmember Smith made the second. So we're going to do a roll call vote. Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Councilmember Geddes.
Aye.
Councilmember Smith.
Aye.
And do I see Councilmember Ellison?
No, can't see her.
That's okay. We have four. That motion passes. We're going to move on to public comment. So if there is anyone who is here on our Zoom meeting who would like to make a public comment, you can go down at the bottom in reactions and give a thumbs up or something, and then we'll know if you want to make a public comment. You have 3 minutes to make the comment.
Okay. We have Allens that wish to make a comment.
Great, okay, all right. Steve and Marla Allen, you have 3 minutes to make your public comment.
Okay, thank you. We're not sure who has the call on this, but the last few years we've had the decision's kind of arbitrary down Canyon Road that we don't have open burns on the east side of the Canyon Road. And yet we have down in our area here a significant part of this neighborhood that we're not even as close to the mountainside out there as what the people across the west side of Canyon Road are farther north of us. And so, you know, we're just a little curious as to why so many in this part get cut off. You know, we can't have fireworks displays, we can't have open burns, we can't have those types of things. I don't know if that's your call or if that's just purely the fire marshal, if you have influence on that. But it would make some sense to us if we're up where we back against the mountain, against the brush, to not be shooting off fireworks and things like that. But when we're down here and you've got several streets and several rows of houses, and you've got a church house between us and any place that has brush around it, and some of our neighbors south of us are even further from all of that, as to why that would just be, I know it's simple to do Canyon Road, but we're just asking if we could have some consideration towards allowing these neighborhoods, Von U and this area down in here, to be able to participate in some of the other aspects of activities and burns and things like that.
And specifically for us, we have an acre of land that we need to take care of, and it makes it very prohibitive to run that all to the dump. So for us to have an open burn, a safe open burn, we're protected all around by, like Steve says, grass, all kinds of things. So we're not anywhere close to the mountainside.
Okay, I forgot to have you, thank you for your comment. I forgot to have you state your names and your address. So if you wouldn't mind doing that now.
Sure. Stephen and Marla Allen, and we live at 9590 North Canyon Road.
Okay, thank you. And if you don't mind, we'll talk with staff about it. And then if you don't mind if I get back to you on that, is that okay?
Absolutely.
We would love.
Take your time and do what you can. And
okay. All right.
We would really appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your comment. I appreciate that. Okay. Is there anybody else who would like to give a public comment? I don't see any other hand. Okay. Good. Then we'll close the public comment portion of this meeting and we will move on to the consent agenda. And if there's anyone who would like to make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I'll make the motion that we approve the consent agenda.
Thank you. Councilmember Smith made the motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, thank you, Councilmember Geddes. Let's do a roll call. Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Councilmember Geddes.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellison. You might want to unmute yourself, Laura.
Sorry about
that. There she goes. Okay, thank you. Councilmember Ellsworth?
Aye.
Councilmember Smith?
Aye.
Okay, that motion passes. Let's move on to city reports and business, and we'll start with our city manager, Mr. Goodwin.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. We are beginning our newest program this summer. It's a kids sports camp that will begin June 8th. They'll have camps each week, Monday through Thursday, for 2 hours a day from 9 to 11, and it'll be $50, and they'll get instruction on a variety of sports. So we're looking forward to trying some new programs here in our community and introducing some kids to some new activities. So if they're interested, they can sign up through our Rec One website. We've partnered with a new company to do virtual gaming and online coding. Its kids will learn video game development concepts, and registration also will be available through the Rec One website, and that will begin May 5th. We're excited about that new opportunity as well. Registration closes for some programs on March 30th. These include our soccer programs, so those spots are filling up. So if you have kids or no kids that want to participate, they should sign up as quickly as they can. We look forward to our golf course opening tomorrow. We had originally hoped that they would open on Monday, but the construction project going through hole 10 and 9 took a day or two longer than we had anticipated. So look for some changes there in hole 10 and some temporary changes to hole 9 to allow for construction to continue and play to proceed. So we just ask golfers to be conscientious of the work that's going on around that area. And then we have spring cleanup on April 24th and May 8th. The dumpsters will be located at St. Andrews like we did last year. So residents will need to make sure that they provide proof of residency upon their arrival. And then finally, we have our parks opening now. We're putting up the nets and opening bathrooms. And we just want people to be vigilant and report vandalism or suspicious activity as they see it. We put a lot of money into our parks and we want to protect those assets and keep them nice. So if you see activity that is needs to be reported, we'd appreciate you if you called it into dispatch or the non-emergency police line. That's all I have, Mayor.
Perfect. Thank you. Councilmember Geddes, do you have anything to report?
I don't have anything to report.
Okay. And then I think you weren't here when I made this announcement at the beginning, but mute your microphone if you're not talking, because the speaker view keeps going to you. So there you go. Okay, perfect. Okay, I'll skip in really fast and then we'll go on to the other council members. The only thing I have to report is I've been put on the aging council for MAG, and it's been really interesting and exciting to see what MAG is doing for our aging population in our county. Wasatch and Summit counties are the counties that they're over. And one of the programs that they have is Meals on Wheels. And I got to go with a couple of interns, one from BYU, one from UVU, and help deliver the meals to housebound seniors in Cedar Hills. And it was a really great experience and really eye-opening to see what they do in that program and how many meals. There's 47 volunteer routes in the three counties, and 43 of those routes are in Utah County. A lot of volunteers bringing these meals to people. And in our city, there were 5 people that these meals were brought into, and their caregiver can also get a meal. So most of the homes, the caregiver also received a meal. That was a great experience, and that's all I have to report. Let's see, I'm gonna go across my screen. Councilmember Ellison, do you have anything to report?
I do not.
Okay, Councilmember Ellsworth?
Nothing today.
Okay, Councilmember Smith?
I just attended my monthly assignment for Central 911, where they were finalizing their budget. So that was super helpful to hear their explanation of their budgeting and to get some feedback from the individual cities on things that they could tweak, or could we understand the budget a little bit better as it related to our city. So I just appreciated that meeting and that understanding of how their budget works. That's it for me.
I'm glad you like that assignment. I love being on that committee. That's a good one. Okay, Councilmember Miller.
I don't have anything, and sorry, I'm eating some soup right now, and nobody wants to see that, so my camera's off for a minute.
Okay, good. That's good. All right. Well, perfect. All right. Then we are going to move on to our scheduled items and public hearings. Our first scheduled item is a review action on an ordinance amending City Code Title I, Chapter 15, related to no-fault golf ball claims. And Mr. Goodwin is presenting.
Yes. Thank you, Mayor. You may recall that last July, we passed this code, this no-fault clause to the City Code Title I that basically I refer to it as our good neighbor program. Throughout the course of the year, and especially last year with so much golf going through the course, there's always a few incidents. These, you know, the errant golf ball that is hit and strikes a windshield or strikes a solar panel or breaks a window. The golf staff does a great job of making every effort possible to find the offending party, but in many cases it's just not practical. We can't do it. So we came up with this no-fault golf ball clause to allow the city to, without accepting any liability, to pay out some small claims and just to help, to recognize that our golf course has an impact on the neighborhood around it, and that we can like I said, be the good neighbor. So after a few months of having that on the books, we've seen a couple items that just maybe need some minor verbiage tweaking. And so the staff and the attorneys are proposing two changes to this code. The first one is on the definition of personal property. We're including a provision that specifically excludes vehicles. We're treating vehicle damage and personal property damage as two completely separate items. And then in the payout section, where the damage to the vehicle is capped at $300 and the damage to personal property is capped at an incident maximum of $1,000, the change in this provision includes the addition of the words to personal property. It's just to clarify, we had a couple incidences last year that added confusion to this code in the way that it was interpreted. And so this should help clear up some of that confusion. And so if the council wants to address those thresholds, those limits, they're more than welcome to do so, but those are the two proposed changes that staff is making at this point. Are there any questions I can answer?
Yeah, Chandler, I have a question. I'm just wondering if you can give us some examples of some of the claims that we paid.
We had a windshield. The one that kind of got into the weeds about personal property versus vehicle was a windshield, and it was one of those high-tech windshields that has the heads-up display where your speed and, you know, I don't know if it's navigation, but everything's is being broadcast on the windshield. And so there's the windshield on that was, I want to say it was about $900 to replace a windshield. In no case is the city going to pay more than the premium on the insurance policy. But in this case, the windshield was quite a bit more than the $300 threshold. So the person saying, you know, this is personal property and your personal property threshold is $1,000. So you should cover my whole windshield.
Gotcha.
To clear up some of that confusion. A couple other instances, we had a window that was broken, and then I want to say two solar panels that were damaged by golf balls. Hiram's here. Hiram dealt with those. So I think that covers all the claims we had.
So three total, am I understanding correctly?
Four.
Four. So
two,
a car.
Two solar panels, a window, and a windshield.
Okay.
Chandler, what's been kind of the response to that policy?
One unfortunate person sits almost right in the way of every bad ball that's hit. And so she had a window and a solar panel in two separate instances. I think that there is a general feeling that they're happy that the city is, you know, like I said, trying to be a good neighbor. They recognize that the city can't do everything to make them whole, but the city doing something, we're helping out, recognizing that there is a bit of an impact on the neighbors. And so you have to kind of balance that. It's at some point you have to say you moved into a house next to a driving range, or you moved into a house next to a golf course, so there's going to be an impact, but recognizing that that doesn't absolve the city from all of the impact or from any responsibility. And so it's a balance, but I feel like the general reception has been very good. In the driver case, the individual was not happy with the $300 limit, but we don't pay that out until they sign something that says that they're not going to hold the city liable. You know, we're recognizing that we're helping them, but we're not going to it's called a no fault clause for a reason. By paying out a minimum amount, we're not accepting any responsibility. And so there was some unhappiness about that, but eventually they ended up signing, because otherwise it's that you don't get anything. And so some golf courses have this and some don't. So I feel like it's generally been well received.
Chandler, sorry, I had another question. Mm-hmm. So in all four of those instances, we couldn't find the golfer?
Yeah. It's especially hard on homes if the homeowner is not home at the time when the incident occurs. Windshields mm-hmm. are typically easier to find because they happen right then. And I believe that there's even language in the code that says that how long they have until there's like a time frame when they have to report the damage.
I think they have like 48 hours or something like that, if I remember right.
And so on a
I remember talking about it.
When it's a windshield, you know, they can say I was driving in this location at this time, and they can just pull into the golf course. And usually by knowing where it happened and how much time has lapsed since it happened, we can usually find out where the golfers are and approach them. On property damage to windows, if they're not home, if like in one case, I think they were on vacation for a couple of days and they came home to it, then it's much harder. It's almost impossible.
Hey, Chandler, weren't a couple of those actually damaged before we enacted our policy and we just went and repaid them right for as good cities?
I'll have to check on that one. I honestly don't remember.
It seems like the solar panel and the window were an issue from
You might be right. I think that was one of the ones that spurred the...
Right. That's my recollection.
Yeah. But we didn't... I know that we didn't go back to even prior incidences, because there was somebody that approached me about a broken window and I said no. But there was... No, as I'm recalling, when we passed the code, it was... We weren't going to cover anything except for that one instance and then going forward.
Yeah, okay.
And what's the procedure, Chandler? Does someone go out and look at the solar panel, look at the window?
Yeah, so it's all arbitrated by our attorney. And so they fill out the damage, they fill out a report with Gretchen, and they submit pictures, and we send those to the attorney, and they review that. I like it because it absolves staff of, you know, what would maybe perceived bias. And I feel like Hiram and Craig have done a wonderful job of interfacing with the residents on these claims.
That's super helpful. Thank you.
I was going to ask, are there other golf courses that have these no faults?
There are a couple. They're not terribly common.
Okay, any other questions from the council? Hiram, do you have anything to add? Nope, okay. Okay, all right, if there are no other questions, I would entertain a motion.
I'll go ahead and make a motion to approve ordinance 03-16-2021A, amending Title I, Chapter 11A, No Fault Golf Ball Claims. And we don't have any amendments for that.
Okay, thank you, Councilmember Ellsworth. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Was that Laura? Okay, yeah. Perfect. Councilmember Ellison has seconded it. Let's do a roll call vote. Councilmember Ellison.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Councilmember Smith.
Aye.
And Councilmember Geddes. Oh, there you are, up in the right corner. Councilmember Geddes.
I need to unmute. Aye.
There you go. Thank you. Okay, that's unanimous. That motion passes. So we're going to move on to item number 9. Are we on 9? Hold on, let me get back to
eight.
We're on 8, that's right. Review action on a resolution authorizing the city to enter into an interlocal cooperation agreement with Utah County for the administration of the 2021 vote-by-mail municipal elections. And Mr. Goodwin again.
Thank you, Mayor. Sorry, I'm trying to multitask here. So every year the Utah County Clerk's Election Division, they oversee our vote-by-mail election. They've done this for the last two municipal elections going back to 2017. And so this is an interlocal agreement between the cities and the county to administer the election for both the primary and the general election for 2021. And just to give you some perspective, there in 2017, the cost per voter was $1.35. In 2019, it went to $1.80. And then this year, the proposed increase is $2.25. From 2017 to 2021, there's a 66% increase in the cost. Now, so that the impact on that, it was significant for Cedar Hills. Just because I think maybe the last two elections we got off scot-free in that we didn't have primaries, and in one case we didn't even have a general election. But some cities are a bit upset, I will say, about the increase to 66% increase from the first year. And I think this is a mixed bag, as I've kind of gone back and forth on this. Some cities are delaying the approval of this interlocal agreement until the county can better explain why there's cost increases. And some cities have gone ahead and passed the interlocal as is, recognizing that it's still cheaper than farming it out to another entity to perform the municipal, to service the municipal election vote by mail. It's however you feel. If you're okay with the cost increase, and I've talked to Charlotte about it, we're building it into the budget with this $225. It's $225 per active voter, and so that comes out to 6,163 voters. And so you're looking at about $12,500 per election. So if you have a primary and a general, you're looking at about $25,000 to $26,000, where in the past we've budgeted around $16,000 for an election. So it's a bit of an increase, but I will give Utah County credit that since 2017, they have readily improved their ability to handle these types of elections. So I'd welcome your feedback. Some cities are tabling this until they get further information. Like I said, I believe Spanish Fork, Highland, and Pleasant Grove is waiting a little bit. And some cities have approved that already, such as Linden. So I'd love to hear your sentiments on it and see how you feel.
Who else would run the election if the county doesn't?
That's the thing, is nobody. And so it's going to be the county. I think it really comes down to a discussion about the cost increase. I think that the county gave cities a spectacular deal the first year, especially. And so I think that seeing the cost of increase go up 66% from that first year in 2017 to what it is today is hard for some of these larger cities to swallow, because it's a significant amount of money. But there was also discussion from the county about applying for grants that help to offset some of the costs to cities, but to run a vote by mail election, because it is kind of still a novelty in many areas of the country. And so there's groups that will fund this in terms of wanting to see it be successful. So the question is, did you apply for grants? Is this something that you still can apply for grants for? And if you have, what's the result? So I know that, I believe tonight, the county is actually presenting on this to Highland City Council. Go ahead, Councilmember Miller.
I was just going to say, I mean, I think that Amelia Powers is very well respected with the elections that she's run. I think that it's balancing cutting edge and keeping costs low. I know that she's very conservative and won't spend anything more than she thinks is necessary. While it's an increase, it still honestly seems relatively cheap to me. It helps that our city's smaller. So the alternative is what we convince the county to lower their cost, and that, you know, that may happen, probably not. I personally am fine with accepting the proposal as is.
Okay.
I agree with Councilmember Miller on all of it. I think the odds of them reducing the price based on feedback from a handful of cities isn't going to happen. That just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
The odds are very much against that. And the way it's been run in the past, we haven't had any issues. I don't have a problem with the price increase.
Okay. And it may be something that we want to watch going forward, because if the cost in 2017 and 2019 was arbitrarily low, and 2021 is more of a reflection of the true cost of running the election, it'll be more indicative of what happens in 2023 if there's a similar increase up to like 275, 280. At that point, then you may have, I think there's better justification maybe for saying, hey, hold on, what's the cost here? One city did say it, I forget which one, did say that they did try to get a bid for how much it would cost for another group to run the election. It was more than the 225. So I still think the 225 is probably a reflection of an accurate cost to run the election. I think, just like I said, some cities are upset with the amount that it's increased since 2017.
I will say, as a side note, I was with Draper Mayor Troy Walker on Saturday, and Draper's going to be using Utah County for their election. I imagine that they're able to do that because part of it kind of creeps over Suncrest.
Yeah.
But at least that's what he told me, is they intended to use Amelia because she's great.
Well, and I think the other part of that is Colleen was informing me today that Salt Lake is actually charging more than Utah County is for their per vote. Vote by mail, so it behooves Draper to head to Utah County. It saves them probably a great deal of money.
Yeah.
I look at this and I think $2.25 per person. If I was running this election, it would cost me $1 to mail it to them and to get it back from them. And then you look at the list of services that the county will perform for the city, and another $1.25 for all of that. Like, I feel like that's actually a pretty good deal. And I know it's more expensive than it has been in the past, but as you said, we didn't pay for an election last time. And I mean, you break it out that way and look at what you're getting for each resident for $2.25. And I feel like it's not that bad.
Yeah. And so a lot of this discussion came about this afternoon between some of the city managers, and so I felt like it was important to notify you of some of the discussion that was happening behind the scenes. But, you know, if we're comfortable with the contract as is and the agreement as is, then we shouldn't be one of the ones that raises stink about it.
Okay. Anyone else on council have any comments or questions about this?
I agree that moving forward is best. I think it would be more hassle and headache in the long run. So I agree with you, Mayor. Can the cops be more effective?
Okay. Kelly, I see you're unmuted. You have a comment?
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, I think some of the cities, I can think of one that was mentioned in particular, want to just maybe flesh out why, so they can explain that to some of their residents who might question it. So I think that's where some of that is coming from, not even nearly as much angst as just wanting to vet it. And I think they're just going to find the same thing that we're talking about tonight. So I'm good to go ahead.
I have a sample motion if you want me to pull it up.
If you'd like to pull that up, that'd be great.
Yeah, it's just the end of the, yeah, there we go.
Yes.
This would be 2021B, correct?
Well,
The other one was an ordinance. So this is
the other was ordinance.
First
okay.
Resolution. Does anyone want to make that motion?
I'll make it.
Okay.
I'll make the motion to approve resolution number 03162021A. resolution authorizing the execution of an interlocal cooperation agreement between Utah County and the city of Cedar Hills, Utah, regarding the administration of the 2021 vote by mail municipal elections.
Thank you, Councilmember Miller. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, Councilmember Smith with the second. Okay, Councilmember Geddes. You're muted. But I saw your mouth move.
Aye.
Thank you. Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellison.
Aye.
Councilmember Smith.
Aye.
Okay, that motion passes unanimously. We're going to move on to item number 9. And that is a discussion of the fiscal year 2021-2022 budget. And Mr. Lowe is presenting.
You there, Charl?
Yep. I'll do it. My laptop microphone doesn't work, so I have two screens. That's a little. All right, okay, you can see me, I'm alive. Okay, tonight we're gonna dive a little deeper into the preliminary budget for one of the funds, and so let's get into that. Every year, it's hard to remember all the things that have gone on in the last 9 years, so I just kind of add to the list of things the city has done relating to water. So I started in 2012, and ever since then I've heard staff's concern about just the high demand on the wells and the pumps. And so early on there was a water committee formed, and there was a study for capacity by Hanson Allen Luce, and there was recommendations. A lot of those recommendations are very difficult to implement because it changes the way residents use their water, and that, basically that's adding secondary meters, and it's something we would have had to go into depth for. And this state had required last year for a plan of each city of when they were going to do meters, but they gave us like 20 years. So I think the city presented a plan almost 20 years out. But that doesn't really change how much the water is getting used or stuff like that. So the city also put restrictions on watering days. We've had to do rehabilitation on some wells and boosters and pumps and normal maintenance. So as of last year, last summer when it was super dry, our aquifers under the Harvey well, or aquifer, wasn't allowing that well to draw as much water as it had in the past. And it was, I think, close to 50% capacity. And so that's a concern. So we definitely, and then with all the building going on in the business district, that's also put a stress on our fire flows. And we were working in the past year, I know the city's been working with the engineer on water rights, and there's been some different water studies. And so that came up was our fire flow, I think, as part of those discussions. Hopefully I'm rehashing this correctly. If someone in Public Works or Chandler wants to correct me, they can. But that kind of gives you a picture of what we've been through. We rely heavily on those two wells plus water from American Forks booster. When we actually had two wells down at one time, which was kind of scary. But next slide. Okay, just a review of of where the money went last year, water sewer fund, approximately 26.5% or almost 900,000 goes to operating wages of staff out of that fund. We have a large chunk goes to what we get charged from Timpanogos Special Service District for sewer charges. A large amount goes towards debt service, and even last year it was even larger because we made extra payments on our principal. One of the things that we, I brought up this in the past, but we have newer council members, our electrical costs for pumping, because we have to pump the water a lot more than like Alpine. So if you look at Alpine, they have a natural spring and their electrical costs are close to zero for managing their water, and ours are around 300,000. So that makes a big difference in your operational costs. And then all the wear and tear from the pumping. So we spent quite a bit on engineering review, mostly for new developments. And then and inspections, and then we spent quite a bit of money on water purchases this last year, and that did include an extra purchase we had to make in October because we were running low on our water. So that was, I think, another, you know, 17,000. And the other items, we spend a lot of money on each year: meter maintenance, changing batteries, putting in new meters, random water maintenance projects when a line breaks, and some storm drain maintenance that could include street sweeping. And lots of labor and storm drain maintenance with the back truck. And then we had quite a bit of improvements last year. And a lot of that was the new developments and the Harvey Park being finished. Next slide. Okay, so when Chandler was reviewing this slide, he pointed out there was a bump in its fiscal year 19, but it happened in September 2018. There's a little bump, and it kind of has stayed around the same cost since then. And that's when they changed how they analyzed, I guess, our stuff.
And what happened? Sorry, I can interject here real quick. Yeah, they come out on site in the city. They have sample locations. This is for Timpanogos Special Service District. This is the sewer plant. They come out and they do a sample read of your system, and they measure are your total suspended solids, your TSS, and your BOD, which is your biological oxygen demand. Because based on those numbers, the cost varies for how to treat your sewer going to the plant. And before this date, and you can look at this kind of teal line, and in September to October in 2018, in 2019, it was actually in 2018, but it's the 2019 fiscal year budget. At this point, this is when they changed how they were taking that sample. Before, they were taking the sample, and the previous district manager instructed the people to say, hey, we can't bill them that way. Decant off the top a little bit, and then we'll test it. But it kind of gave you artificially low numbers. And so Rich Nicholson, when he came in, one of the first things he implemented was, no, the sample is what the sample is, and we're going to bill them on the sample as it's tested. And so that's when that change was implemented. And you see that from that time, it's not just an anomaly. You can see that it's pretty consistent that's what our BOD and TSS is in terms of our sewer sample.
Okay. Thanks, Chandler.
Yeah.
Okay. That has been a little higher the last couple of years, but it seems like it's pretty consistent now. Next slide. So this is just a reminder of how much some cities grow and how much ours is growing. impact fees for water, sewer, and storm drain. Eagle Mountain passed Harriman. It used to be Harriman getting like $9 million. Now Eagle Mountain's the fastest growing, and then Saratoga Springs. So you can see a big shift on the west side of growth and slowing down in Lehigh. And that's still a ton of growth, but for them, that's a slowdown. And then, you know, the next closest is Highland to, Alpine to us, and they have about 244,000 in impact fees, and we're around 36,000. What that means is when they're trying to build a new well or trying to make storm drain improvements, they can access those impact fees for those projects. We don't really have that. If you go to the next slide, this, our water and sewer impact fee balances are negative. What that means is because we've spent, especially in this last year, we paid off all that debt, which qualified as impact fee expense. So our water impact fee balance is negative 1.7 million. Sewer impact fees around negative 200,000. So we don't have impact fees that are able to fund if we have a major project. So back in 2012, recognizing this, our city was almost built out, and we're still going to have infrastructure that fails over time, that needs to be replaced over time. They came up with the pay-as-you-go system to save up for these type of things because we don't have enough in impact fees. Next slide. So for this upcoming year, talk to Kevin and TJ about what they, if we, they have many things that they would like improved, but what can they do in the next 12 months? Because there's only so much you can manage as far as projects go. And so one of the big concerns is Harvey Well, finding a good solution if the aquifer continues to be low, this at high demand. It went back up during the winter, but we'll need to see where it is in July and see if we're getting enough water from that. If not, we would like to have a plan in place this summer with the help of have engineers locate, I think they use LIDAR or something, an image where the water is. And it would most likely find where is the next best place in our city to locate a replacement well and have a plan in place and design if we need to do that. So that's one project, is we can use a lot of the design that from Cottonwood, but we would, the main thing is finding the best location for that. And then running the line to the system. And then TJ was driving me around showing his concerns. If you go to the top of the townhomes on Morgan, the water pressure is around maybe 40. And you go to the bottom of that upper zone, it's over 160 or so. So there's some improvements that could be made with some adjustments. There's one line that gets pumped from Pond 10 to Pond 12, where they've been close to where they've been doing some work, PG irrigation. And they would like a more robust, I think, pipe that's thicker that could handle an earthquake or also the current pipe there is at its end of life. I think it's about 15 years old or so based on the type of, and the use it's getting. And if that pipe fails, I guess, pond 12 would just drain into the, back into the, you know, all the way back to 10 and flood that area. Pond 12 is the biggest pond. So they would like to secure that area. And then I brought up fire float earlier. With the new growth we've had in the commercial area, we're close to our max on what we can allow to be built in our city. And if 200 units get built on that hillside, there wouldn't be the fire flow to approve that project without additional storage. So that needs to be planned for and designed. And then so we last did an update to our utilities with Bowen Collins back in 2016. That is something. What that study does is it looks at these upcoming projects and says, okay, how do we fund these with the pay-as-you-go approach versus adding debt? And so we do our best to use the existing reserves and, if possible, some of these projects may end up requiring debt, but we can minimize debt depending on if there's an emergency or not. Other things that are smaller projects, just adding a VFD to the Bay Hill booster, that's something that could even be done this spring. It doesn't require any engineering. They got a bid for it, I guess, a year ago, and it's just something they just need a green light for. And then other things that could come up due to mandates, hopefully not this year, but we could be asked to chlorinate our water. And then also in our future plans, there's a storm drain retention area that's part of the city's long-term plan. I don't know how urgent that is, but it's been brought up to me before. And secondary meters eventually will need to be installed. Do we want to do that over time, all at once? I think Chandler's has our grants person looking at possible grants. So that would take a lot of stress off the system, but it's not very popular. And then other things that could happen are just irrigation pumps failing, or eventually getting real-time reads from towers so residents can see if they, with real-time, if they have a leak or not. And so that's all the possible projects. The top half is mostly for this year. Other ones would be more mid-range, hopefully. Any questions on these projects?
Thank you for explaining them, because for me, this is where I'm really learning a lot and trying to understand how it all works. So I appreciate you taking the time to go through them and explain.
Let me add that many of these projects, this won't be the only explanation that you hear for them. Some of them are small, like Charles said, the VFD Bay Hill booster pump. That's a pretty small project. We can get ahead moving on. But for example, in some of these long-term projects like Harvey and Cottonwood Well chlorination, that wouldn't be something that this is the only discussion that we have about it. This is something that we would come back to the council. Same thing with the other mid to long-range projects he has here at the bottom. But you know, I'm happy to sit down with any of you and discuss this. Our water system can be a bit confusing because I feel like we've named everything in this city after the Harveys, and so. It can get a little confusing. And if you have any questions, feel free to stop by, talk to me, talk to Kevin, or talk to Jeff. We have great resources that can help walk you through the system.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm still learning about it, so we'll definitely have more discussions on this. Next slide. So one of the things that will help us, as unless the guidelines become more restrictive than they appear, there's the latest estimate is that Cedar Hills will receive $1.12 million from the federal government that can be used for water and sewer. So that could definitely help with items like if we are required to do a new well, or if we are required to do additional water storage. So it might not cover all of it, but anything helps. So, but there's, this also means every city in Utah and across the country is going to be doing these kind of improvements, and the demand on the engineers is going to be pretty high for the next couple of years relating to this. It needs to be spent by 2024, and it's not allowed to be given as like a tax cut to residents. One of the things, if you take this money, you agree to not cutting their taxes. And then you'd only get half of it, I think, in a few months, and then we'd get the other half in about a year. So hopefully some of these bigger projects will have them all planned and designed in the next 6 months. I think that's any questions on this American Rescue Plan? Okay, next slide. So every year I go and compare and see what other cities are charging. Like I mentioned earlier, we have some challenges in our city with our electrical costs, with our with the water we have to purchase. So that's one big advantage. Alpine doesn't have to purchase outside water, so that's a couple hundred thousand dollars there. Doesn't have to pump water, that's another few hundred thousand dollars there. So you can see how that would make a difference in what you could charge. And then the other part is just cities still getting significant impact fees. They can do projects without using operational revenue. But yeah, so that's where we're at. 6,000 gallons, I don't know. Sometimes we do 8,000, sometimes we do 6,000. I feel like 6,000 is probably close to an average use. Any questions here? Next slide. So I talked about this a little earlier, the Bowen Collins philosophy. I think before my time back in 2012, I think sometime the TSSD, our sewer vendor, they were experiencing this growth and doing these large bumps, and I think the council back then was like, how can we not have such large increases each year? Can we make the increases smaller instead of having larger every few years? And so that was one of the goals of when they originally did the study. I think also they were concerned about some of the capital maintenance and how they're going to fund it and how they're going to fund inflation. So in the last year of the update, they had proposed some rates, but because I don't feel like we're covering our debt. We paid some debt down. We still have these large projects ahead, but I feel like we can be fine with just cutting a couple of the rates in half and not raising sewer. One of the reasons why sewer, if you look at revenues versus expenditures in the budget, the sewer covers, they were trending super, super high when they originally did the study on increases, and they've flattened out. And so the study assumed the same kind of increases over time, and they really haven't shown that kind of increase. So I don't feel like that needs any increases at this time. And then what the preliminary increases for staff amount to 28,000. And then our current debt service ratio is budgeted at 1.65, and our bond covenants require 1.25, so we're okay there. Any questions with the water sewer fund about anything about it? We'll not cover it again probably until May, but okay. Next. So after we had a discussion last time on the budget, my sister lives in the Forest Creek area, so she just sent the preliminary plans to her neighbors. And so this is some of the feedback I got from the residents that live right next to Heritage. So there's all kinds of opinions. Some of it, the park's boring. Some of it's, we just need to, fix a few things. And so, but I just thought it'd be interesting for you guys to see what some of the things they're saying. I think where you may see some consensus is fixing the basketball court, fixing the playground, and adding garbage cans. And those are the main things there's a consensus on. Then the other things, there's like a big, probably various opinions. I have actually reached out to the principal at the school, because I feel like they would, I have seen a lot of children's classes on, if you want to call it a field trip, go to Harvey Park and play for recess instead of using their own playground. And when my sister was on the PTA, she was doing lots of fundraisers, and they were never able to raise any money to add to the equipment, but they were able to just fix the existing equipment. And so I think it would be beneficial to the school if some of the equipment was actually maybe on the border or even on their land. And then so the principal responded today that he has sent that to the district, and he hopes it works out. Because, for example, if a basketball court was actually on their land but just bordered the park, it would be something that their kids could use at recess and really enjoy during recess, versus, you know, if it's across the creek, then maybe that's not accessible to them. So, or a swing set or whatever. If there's anything that they would let us put on their side, then I just think it would help with some of our spacing.
Hey, Carol.
Yeah.
I just had a quick question on that, having taught and stuff, and knowing how the district works. When we want to use their stuff, they don't let us use their stuff. They don't let us use their fields without paying for them. It's private property, as far as, you know, if they want to tell people they can't be on it on the weekends, that's private property. So that could get my only concern is that it get mucky and not in our favor.
Yeah. So we don't have to approve it, but I just wanted to explore it.
I'd love to hear it, but I just know from the way they like to run things that's right. That's not going to air in our favor. So we're going to spend the money, and we're going to get told that people can't be on it, or that we've got to rent it, or, you know, those sorts of things, like we used to have to rent for family festival.
Right. I get that for fields and gym space, but I'm not sure if they would do that to a swing set or basketball court, but we'll see.
Yeah. I was gonna throw out, I know just in American Fork, they just had a situation where a group came in and used Shelley Elementary because it's all fenced. They used it as a dog park for a Sunday activity. And that created a problem where they had to call the police because that's not a public park that they can just go and use on a weekend as a dog park.
Okay.
So thanks though.
Thank you.
I love the ideas. I'm just throwing out some.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think outside the box. So
yeah.
But thank you. I realize it's kind of a Hail Mary, but I just wanted to try it. So, next slide. I just wanted to show. Can you go to the next slide? Okay, so the next couple of slides are just some of the work that some landscape designer architects have done. So this one, she's actually based out of Huntsville, and she's kind of into native, like drought tolerant stuff. So some of the people make comments, we need drought tolerant type stuff. And not just throw wild seed and let weeds grow in, but actually like nicer stuff. So she's pretty good at that. She's on house.com and Instagram under the Ardent Gardener if you want to look at her stuff. And then the next slide. There's bigger firms like G. Brown Design. They were recommended to me. I know Provo and South Jordan have used them. And then we've also used Insight Design for Harvey, and they did the Provo and Logan Temple. And most of their stuff is a little more G. Brown stuff. A lot of it's pretty modern. So I didn't know. I did find some rustic stuff they've done for Park City homes. And then I think Insight could do a heritage park type of feel Zen garden, but I'd probably, ask if they're for some proposals and see what they propose and see if any of it makes sense. But those are some designers I've looked at. I don't know if there's any designers you're aware of that would be a good fit for Heritage Park, but those are some I've reached out to. So any opinions on designers?
I don't have an opinion one way or the other really, but I just worry about installing something like in the previous slides, the Zen garden. There's some little features in there I can see somebody getting leverage under and destroying. Yeah. I just worry about installing something beautiful like this and it just getting destroyed. So whatever we decide on, we have to be so careful.
Right.
That it's, destructive proof. I don't know.
Needs to be. So some of the things that might be simple are maybe, the things that they can get leverage on, probably wouldn't want to put so much. It would have to be pretty heavy duty. There could be a flagstone patio or a path, maybe. I know at national parks, they use flagstone a lot, and they also use kind of like small rocks that they compact for their paths instead of, I don't know if people want to see a lot of paved paths around Heritage, but maybe we can connect different areas with compacted rock or something like that. So, that's going to be a challenge for any designer. Is we haven't had people at Harvey so much hurt the landscape, but anything's possible. So
just give them time. They'll
just give them time. Yeah. Okay.
It's beautiful. It looks so peaceful. And that's what that park is about. It's so peaceful and pretty there.
Yeah. So this vendor there's a couple of vendors that make stuff out of black locust wood. And one of them's called Earthscapes, and they've done some pretty cool themes with wood. Sometimes it's just a pile of logs. There's a couple of those where, I mean, they have some kind of natural structure to them, but there's one in Park City and I think Washington down by St. George, some timber stacks, they call them. And so those, I think some of the log stuff I've seen and some of these log structures might blend in well with heritage. And then Burliner, who we used at Harvey Park, also has some structures made out of black locusts. So I'd probably have those firms have a couple proposals where probably have children from Cedar Ridge give their opinions on maybe a couple designs and see what they think. But that's kind of where I'm thinking as far as the type of equipment and what the look would be. So let's play, Chandler, can you play that one right in the middle? Can you click on that video real quick?
We'll see.
I don't know if there's a sound or, but you can kind of see the stacked logs and what that kind of looks like. And then they have these more modern rustic towers. That's a sugar beet theme, that one. And then they did some stuff in Florida with dark. Okay, and then if you, when that one's over, do the one to the right, that one with the, this one's in Washington by Redwood Forest. They've done a lot of parks in San Francisco and in
sure.
So, anyways, that video, the car blows up and the pole's still standing and it's fine. So, it's more durable than it looks, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And if someone sprays paint it, you can sand, palm sand it off or something like that. Versus if it's plastic, it might melt if someone started a fire. So it's actually probably easier to repair than some things in some ways. But it's definitely a different kind of look, and it's just something a little more unique than maybe you'd see at a normal playground. So that's what attracted me to it. Any questions on the style? Or
I like some of the rustic look for a different look in a park, so.
Yeah, I agree. I like to stay with the rustic, especially in that park, since it's so wooded and has the stream. I like it.
All right, I think that might be all I have for you. So, till next time. Okay. Thanks for watching.
Thanks for all the work. Yeah, thanks for everything that you put into it. I know Charles spends a lot of time researching and putting these things together to find the best thing for our parks. And I know it takes a lot of time, and I certainly appreciate it. Looking at Harvey Park, I mean, that product was amazing. And I'm sure that Heritage will be as well, I have no doubt. So, okay, that was our last item on the agenda. So does anyone have any questions or anything for Cheryl before we adjourn our meeting? Or anyone else? If not, I will take a motion to adjourn.
I'll make the motion that we adjourn.
Okay, Councilmember Geddes made the motion. Can I have a second?
Second.
Who said that, Ben?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Councilmember Ellsworth has the second. Roll call vote, Councilmember Geddes.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellison.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
And Councilmember Smith.
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. Our meeting is adjourned. Thank you for attending.